Thursday afternoon. Welcome into the fast lane across the Virginia Talk Radio Network. Thank you for hanging out with us today. Another day where we're trying to navigate everything that's going on with the coronavirus and COVID-19. And, you know, it's like every day I'm sitting there trying to decide, you know, what kind of balance we should be striking between maintaining relevancy and obvious just acknowledgement that this is the reality of our world, the coronavirus and no real live sports taking place right now. The only thing really that's on the horizon that's exciting and you can plan for is the NFL draft and the schedule release a couple of weeks later, because everything else is basically just contingency plans that are being put in place by leagues that are trying to get started again. And on the one hand, I admire the fact that they're trying to get back to action. And I will reiterate that some leagues are just better positioned, both in terms of, you know, are they, you know, geared more toward a conservative mindset and audience, which means they're probably more apt to say, hey, let's get back to normal as soon as possible. Are they more of a progressive-based league, cough the NBA? Are they more international? Are they just in a spot where, you know, athletes and performers are right on top of each other, so there's another element to spreading germs? But the reality is that we're still trying to figure out ways to cure the coronavirus, to keep it under control and to keep it under wraps, and there is a sports component to it, but yet sports is also supposed to be the big release for everyone. It's why I've never had a problem with off-seasons taking place right now like the NFL's been doing. I disagree with the fact that the NFL has tried to say it's unanimous that everybody's on board with proceeding with the draft when there's obvious documented evidence that that's not the case. You know, that's like back in the day when my parents would claim we have a unified front and we were all smart enough by the time we got to high school to realize that's my dad's way of saying that he strong-armed my mom into agreeing with something rather than both of them mutually agreeing to a particular point. And at some point, we were smart enough to realize it, and then you feel insulted because somebody's playing you, for not having caught on when everyone knows what's going on. And that's the way I think some people feel with the NFL, that they're insulting your average fan's intelligence with how they've handled some things. But the bigger picture principle of wanting to preserve some sense of normalcy, knowing that by doing that, you're trying to continue to prepare everybody to be ready to play when training camps begin in July, which I think is the first point, whether they go off on time or not. And then obviously preseason games in late July with the Hall of Fame game in early August after that. And then the regular season in early September, that you want to have that plan in place. Do I believe secretly behind closed doors that they, like every other league, are coming up with contingency plan after contingency plan after contingency plan? Yeah, I absolutely do. I think you're naive if you don't think that's the case. But the NFL right now does have one benefit that no other league has, and that's the fact that the NFL's games, meaningful games, don't take place until September. Just games in general, exhibition games, aren't until the very back half of the summer, late July and really early August, that because of that, they just have the benefit of time. Brings me to a quote that I heard the other day, this from Andrew Brandt on one of Ross Tucker's podcasts. Ross Tucker, a buddy of mine, and of course we had him on our podcast exclusive a couple of weeks ago. The interview's archived at the Fast Lane with Ed Lane podcast and VirginiaTalkRadioNetwork.com. But here was Andrew Brandt and his comment on the NFL and the real benefit that they have, which is just time, and time being the element to it. And then the other fact that goes into most of this right now, which is also something that Andrew Brandt touched on, which is balancing that with risk versus reward, and something that's even more at the forefront for all the other leagues as opposed to the NFL.
This comes down to this incredible balance between risk and reward that hopefully will change as time goes on. Right now, I don't know if anyone disagrees with me, I see the risk greater than the reward. So the risk is health, player health, staff health, public health, etc. The reward is return to normalcy and economic gain. And there's your equation.
Andrew Brandt, on one of Ross Tucker's podcast network outlets, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, former NFL executive, and he's now a certified NFL agent, but he's got experience on both sides, the business angle, and we bring that up because that's really what this boils down to, is that these are business decisions. And, you know, it begs a bigger societal question, and we can try to get into this today around 5:50 when we do our Victory Lane segment on Facebook Live. But how do you balance it out? How do you balance the, you know, health and welfare of yourself, your family members, and everyone else? And do you get to a certain point where you say, you know what, yeah, that's important, but so too are being able to feed them and being able to have a quality of life that we enjoy? Because I don't think there's a perfect answer to that. And I think in reality, you're trying to do the best that you can, which is why you're at the Blend now, where you're likely to see a lot of games take place with no fans in the stands first. And especially that's likely to be the case in professional leagues, where getting back to normalcy is coincided with the economics of the league and the economics of the league operating and everyone else being able to make their money off of it. Coaches, players, general managers, owners, and obviously the people that operate facilities or are officials or inspectors and equipment people. There are a lot of financial livelihoods that are at stake, and it's all a business when you get to the professional level. It's a business at the collegiate level, but there is another element to it that if you're going to tout amateurism, and we know to a degree that it's, you know, I'd say a charade, but certainly to a degree it's way overblown in the value of it. But if you're going to say that athletes can't get paid, you can't treat them the same as paid employees, and you can't have the same level of expectations or expect them to behave differently, because at least paid employees have a major financial incentive, whereas employees, yes, they're getting a scholarship, but college football, basketball, wrestling, cross country, field hockey, insert your sport here, participant, they're not profiting in nearly the same manner. We'll touch on all that later. We'll also get the perspective of a former athlete, former Virginia Cavaliers star and NFL player Chris Canty, set to stop by with us at 5:30 today on the Fast Lane. But we'll get to the top five at five in just a moment. Before we dive into that, a reminder, as you shop at the grocery store, have another interesting experience to share with you there in our Facebook Live Victory Lane segment at 5:50 today. But as you get ready to shop at the grocery store, when you shop the perimeter, which is always the healthiest route, Gano sausage, Country Boy on the label, it means quality on the table. After you make it as part of your crock pot dishes, your grilled dishes, or in the pan for breakfast and sausage, Gano sausage. Country Boy on the label, quality on the table. Now, it is time for the top five at five.
It's time for the top five at five. Five things you need to know right now. Number one.
First thing is Travis Edie, who goes from VMI to Rice. And is, you know, we're not going to dive into really exactly what Rice is getting other than a player that was a prolific scorer as a freshman for the Key Dets. I think it just highlights more of a larger concern for VMI that will be the reality for them when they get big basketball talent to come in to Lexington. And that's the fact that because of the, and I don't think this is a bad thing at all, it sets a lot of their students up to be extremely successful when they leave VMI. But, you know, I've got a buddy of mine who coaches at VMI now, and I've known other people who've gone there, as you probably do as well if you are from the Central and Southwest Virginia area listening to us, either by asking your connected device to stream CBS Sports Radio Lynchburg or checking us out at the Fast Lane with Ed Lane podcast, among our other outlets. But you probably know somebody who's gone there that it's a great school to prepare you because of the rigors for life after college when you get into the harsher, more challenging real world. There is a flip side to it, though. When you're an athlete and you want to be successful in that area, especially if you believe you have any kind of professional aspirations and abilities, that when you add in the demands that are not forgiven because you're an athlete at VMI, it's not the relaxed standards that you find at other schools. It's extremely strict. You're going to have players that go there, may discover that they're really talented, whether that's early in their time at VMI or they fulfill their undergraduate obligations and leave as a grad transfer to go somewhere else. But because of that, they're going to be dealing with this in reality. Whether it's the transfer, whose name escapes me right now, but he went from VMI to Georgia Tech this past offseason, last offseason, or obviously Travis Edie leaving from VMI to go to Rice. It's going to be the reality of that school, is that when they get really talented players, it's not just a great basketball player, but it takes a certain mindset to be able to stick around at VMI and try to balance out the obligations athletically with the lack of flexibility. And again, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but just the more rigid academic and key debt obligations that go into being a VMI student athlete, which is why, you know, I hated seeing a guy like Travis Edie leave VMI. But if you have professional aspirations, I totally get it. And I don't fault people for making business decisions, because yes, there's an educational component that I think you should try to take advantage of in college, but also people have to make these decisions on their own, and either they get rewarded with them for great financial careers professionally, or they end up getting burned by that, and maybe they have to realize what's, you know, what they've missed out on. But ultimately, in the U.S., I believe you should be free to make that decision either way, but it is something VMI is going to have to deal with.
Number two.
West Virginia Athletic Director Shane Lyons, who came out and had some fascinating figures that he brought up about a week ago. He spoke with the West Virginia Network, West Virginia News Network's Oppie Kirchhoff, I believe, is the one with whom he spoke. And forgive me if I'm wrong on that one, but you know, he mentioned just the financial ramifications that could be coming to a university like West Virginia and have already been discussed. And it was the West Virginia Metro News where he spoke with them, and it was Alex Hickey. He does a podcast with Hoppy Kirchhoff and also does one with Tony Caridi, who's the voice of West Virginia. But it's touched on something that we've known for quite some time, which basically is whether it's at West Virginia, Virginia Tech, UVA, Liberty University, or insert your other school, that football is a must right now for the overall academic welfare. And it's why that you're seeing now the possibility of expanding the playoff from 4 teams to 8 teams. More on that when we get done with the top 5 at 5. But the reality of this being that, you know, West Virginia is an example. They had an overall athletic department revenue of $102.6 million in 2018. But they had $91.8 million in expenses. And Virginia Tech, they've documented this very well at TechSideline.com as another example of it. Those are just two schools. But if you remove football from the equation, there is so much money that's going to disappear on top of the already disappeared money that has come from the lack of the NCAA tournament. Shane Lyons was quoted, he's the West Virginia Athletic Director, but his quote was, it would be catastrophic, quote unquote, he told the West Virginia Metro News. He said, you're talking about $38 million that is TV revenue you get from the networks to air games. The conference gets anywhere from $350 to $400 million to distribute to the 10 schools in the Big 12. So obviously you get the middle of that and you're at about $38 million per school out of the $380 million in revenue. But Shane Lyons, this is where it gets real interesting. He said, quote, if the games are not played and therefore you don't have the TV revenue, you're looking at approximately $30 million to $50 million to $40 million in TV revenue gone. Then, from a season ticket standpoint, about $16 million. So you're looking at over $50 million in terms of a hit from a financial standpoint if football isn't played. And certainly that sport, with the insurance you have to carry, with the coaching salaries, the investment in facilities, the travel and the nutrition, which are underrated expenses, they also have those, but ultimately that's where the cost comes from and it funds other programs. And it would not only be catastrophic for football for West Virginia, but more importantly, it would be catastrophic for other sports as well. We, again, go back to Andrew Brandt, who is on the Business of Sports podcast, with who has the Business of Sports podcast as part of the Ross Tucker Network. But here's what he had to say in terms of at-risk sports and where the heat most likely will get felt.
Here's the group most vulnerable with the trickle-down effect of lack of revenues in college sports. Men's non-revenue sports. Because the hierarchy is going to be men's football, men's basketball, and women's sports. Okay, that's going to be the hierarchy. Men's football, men's basketball, and women's sports. Those at risk are going to be men's non-revenue sports.
That's Andrew Brandt on one of the Ross Tucker Football Network podcasts. And the reason we weave that into the top five and what Shane Lyons, the West Virginia Athletic Director, said is it's not football that's going to go away, and it's not men's basketball, because those are where 80% football and 20% men's basketball of the revenue comes from. It's the fact that you add in Title IX and the need to have an even representation of women's sports and women's scholarships, that football and men's basketball stick around, and then to balance it out, you have to have a bunch of female sports that are there. So there's not going to be the trim effect there that it will be on other sports. And we can get into this more as well, because Great stuff yesterday from Michael Smith of Sports Business Journal. But again, it's the overall economic impact as it relates to programs. And that's where no football season can be devastating, and why in some form or fashion, schools are doing everything they can to come up with plan after plan after plan to ensure football is played in the 2020-2021 season and academic calendar year for the overall sake of athletic departments.
Number three.
So this is an interesting one, and we touch on sports betting quite a bit here on the Fast Lane, but apparently for about a three-hour window the other night, West Virginia actually allowed presidential election betting for 2020, and then FanDuel pulled it back. And as it relates to that, You know me, I'm as pro sports betting as it gets when it comes to college and professional sports, because it actually keeps this stuff above board and it makes fixing games less likely, because the sports books want even action on both sides. And when they get some kind of fishy behavior, even if it's on a small conference school, this stuff gets fleshed out much more quickly. And in a lot of cases, they will just reject a wager or they just won't take it. And so the big people that have a financial incentive to try to get a game fixed, their bets just don't get taken. So it's harder for them to actually, quote, get down, end quote, on a game. But when it comes to a presidential election, I don't think you'd ever throw the election, because I actually believe that most people in power and in politics love that so much that there's no way they want to squander that opportunity. I just don't like it from a sheer standpoint of precedent of getting involved in elections and having people being able to wager on it and then trying to use additional funds to influence what might unfold in an election. And I'm not going to get into, was an election fixed or was it not? That's not the point of discussing this here on the Fast Lane. You're entitled to your own opinions in certain cases there. Where it does kind of go down for me is with sports betting. There's a difference between sports betting and election betting. Look, if it's out there, take advantage of it, all said, and you've got the choice to do it. I would just say I am more cautious than I am anything else when it comes to sports betting. And I am okay with West Virginia not allowing it, if nothing more than this, because it's such new territory, not having a firm grasp on it. Or do you accept it just at the higher levels and not at the lower levels because of the ability to fix games more effectively and influence elections, whereas the bigger the election is, the harder it is to do that? I don't have all the answers, so I'm not going to pretend to say it. All I will do is defend West Virginia as a state in this case, because we need to find more information and this needs to be properly vetted in a time where, let's be honest, public officials and their focus really needs to be on other things. Should this be addressed at some point? Yes. Should we probably come to a game plan for where this can be bet on? Probably, because if you don't come to it now, then it's already being offered in a lot of offshore accounts. But I understand West Virginia being reluctant to look into this further.
Number four.
Quickly, the other day, the NFL decided to finally get rid of the challenging of defensive pass interference calls, which it was all done to appease Saints fans anyway, after they're being upset, understandably, at the poor officiating at the end of the NFC Championship game loss to the Rams a couple of years ago. But that was the wrong element to take anyway if you're the NFL. The NFL could have also avoided this by just admitting that, hey, we didn't do a proper job enforcing the targeting call on the same play, and that we could really find a way to solve this problem by allowing targeting calls to be challenged and to be reviewed and being more strict on the interpretation and enforcement of it, similar to the college game, which, yes, it can be ridiculous in college and guys often get thrown out and it's overblown in how it's interpreted, but I'm okay erring on the side of caution in the event of public safety when it comes to players and player safety as well.
Number five.
Motor Mile Speedway going ahead and canceling the entire 2020 season. And I don't know enough about the local short track circuit to know whether these drivers would be better served just waiting it out until we get to the latter part of summer or not. I don't have the economic data to provide insight into that. We will hopefully have more on that tomorrow. Brian Keith of frontstretch.com is going to stop by for an exclusive tomorrow to give us some insight into this, either at 5:30 or at the Fast Lane with Ed Lane podcast. Just stay tuned to Fast Lane, Ed Lane, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for updates on that. But from a just fans' perspective, I am much more in favor of the approach that a lot of the larger leagues have taken, which is trying to kick the can down the road, see what you can do to play these seasons and how you can do it, while making sure that you're safe in the here and now. Just my two cents on that particular point. We mentioned this as well on the Fast Lane, because this has also been kicked around as we wrap things up on the Top 5 at 5, that we're looking at a different era of college football. And one of those things that we've touched on has been the fact that revenue is going to need to be replaced. Already losing revenue from March Madness and the desperation to just have sporting events played over the 2020-2021 season. Most notably, sorry fans of non-revenue sports, and I enjoy them as much as anybody, but the need to have football first and men's basketball second. And one of the ways that you're already seeing this transpire, ideas are being blossomed because of this. I do believe that we'll get more creativity in some ideas, urgency in others, but the need to do this, and that is that some people say, well, we already found who the best team was by having a 4-team playoff. I've said all along that it's going to expand at some point to 8 teams, and maybe at some point after that to 16 teams. And the reality of the reason why it's going to do that is there's just more money to be made by expanding the college football playoff. And yes, you can take away the bowl game experience for certain players, but I also believe that a lot of players would rather have one game in a college football playoff than one game in a bowl game setting, because at least the college football playoff, you're playing for something else. And maybe it's not a neutral site. Maybe you have to go to Alabama or LSU or Ohio State or Clemson, and maybe you end up getting your butts whipped and handed to you, but you do get that experience. But inevitably, because of the lack of revenue right now, and we're not yet sure of the financial ramifications of COVID-19 and the coronavirus, but I think the one thing we know, and Michael Smith touched on this yesterday, and we'll share this bite with you, and that is TV contracts, once they get ratified, if not sooner, we're going to see the college football playoff expand because it brings money, which is more needed than ever before.
We've got 5 years left on the current deal, and I think that current deal with ESPN will run its course. But when we get to 25, 26, and we're looking at the next iteration of the college football playoff, I think there's a very good chance we could be looking at some type of an 8-team playoff. And from there, I think you look at what the different models could be as far as the 8 best teams or the 5 automatic qualifiers, group of 5 teams, and 2 at-larges. There are a couple of different ways to do it. I feel confident in saying that there's a strong majority that would be in favor of expanding the college football playoff. I think it's just a matter of how you do it. You know, would that first round be on campus or would it be at a bowl game? Like, for example, if you have 4 first round games and they're played on a campus site, that means the 4 losers of those first round games don't get a bowl experience. And, how heavily that factors into the equation, I don't know. I've heard that brought up by Bill Hancock and others who run the college football playoff. They want all the football players to be able to have a bowl experience. And so if they go play Ohio State in the first round and get beat, they don't really get to have that bowl experience. But you're talking about, the opportunity to at least compete in a tournament that would decide a national champion. And so there's trade-offs both ways, but yeah, I could definitely see us going in that direction with 8 teams at the next TV contract.
That's Michael Smith, Sports Business Journal and Sports Business Daily, yesterday on the Fast Lane. The full interview is up at the Fast Lane with Ed Lane podcast and VirginiaTalkRadioNetwork.com. But, it's why they are serious, college football conference commissioners and the athletic directors that basically wield the power over them and the school presidents that do as well. Of expanding the college football playoff. I think it'll get to 8 teams. I don't think it would stop necessarily getting to 16 teams because you already see it in the other levels of college sports, FCS 1AA, Division 2, Division 3, and those schools, the expenses are high and they don't have the same sources of revenue. It's not the exact same expenses because coaching salaries aren't nearly as high the lower you go down the totem pole, but there's also not the TV revenue that comes in from it, and they're pulling it off right now. and just the thrill of being part of a championship event versus what's essentially a glorified scrimmage, where we already see players say, bowl experience is great, but I'm heading out to the NFL and it's going to hurt my draft stock and nobody really cares in the league if I skip. It may help if I play, but it's not going to hurt me if I don't, in terms of the eyes of the NFL and their decision makers, that they've already made that decision. And then you factor in some of the other elements. And this is from David Teal. Two things he brought up. One of them is, he mentioned this on his Twitter handle a couple days ago, by David Teal, UVA's 2019 athletic department payroll, $44.6 million, and Virginia Tech's was $34 million. And he also referenced something from Whip Babcock when he spoke with the media yesterday, that it'd be about $660,000 to keep every single athlete on scholarship if you allow those eligible athletes from spring sports to come back next year. Now, obviously, they're not all going to come back, and Whip Babcock was very clear on that when he spoke with the media yesterday, and David Teal articulated that very clearly. But it's the TV revenue that comes from the playoff as it's set now, the added TV revenue that will come, and it may go down a little bit, or it may be impacted somewhat based on the economy, but we're still unsure of that. But I don't think it'll take a major hit because there's so much money out there. And the money that can be had by college programs and the fact they need it, that's where this ultimately comes into play. What about the perspective of a former college athlete and NFL player? We'll share that with you next on the Fast Lane. Chris Canty, former Virginia Cavaliers star and former NFL defensive lineman, set to join us next here on the Fast Lane.